じゃないですか。
This is for crackle coffee. Yeah, my name is Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
Hi. Everyone is here and everyone is on Zoom. It's like the AA of the future.
Right.
You should. I mean, back along, but the more people we can reach, the better, I suppose, right? So, welcome everybody. And Bill is out there somewhere. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to speak tonight. Anyway, yeah, I'll keep going. It's an interesting format. I'll try to watch the time, and then that way we can have some time for everybody else to share as well. So, I'll kind of do a little bit of what it was like and what happened, and the glory that I'm living in today through the program. So, yeah, I definitely had a battle with alcoholism for a long time. Since I was young, you know, I remember taking my first drink and I had a different type of reaction than other people around me. The first beer I had, I actually wanted, you know, I craved for a second. I remember I was at like a junior high party and somebody had thrown a beer over the fence from a high school party that was happening next door. And everyone was scared to drink it, but I stepped up and did the job. And, you know, I remember just catching that first buzz and that first time alcohol ever hit my system. You know, I didn't spit it out or say it was gross like everybody else. It didn't taste that great. I don't know what kind of beer it was. I'm sure it wasn't, you know, the highest class beer, but it's probably like Budweiser or something. But I drank it, and right away I knew that I wanted more, you know. And it just progressed like that until I was able to get my hands on more alcohol later in junior high and high school. And I would get drunk, and I would just think, when can I do it again? You know, that was my next thought immediately. I didn't get out of control with alcohol in the beginning. I didn't, you know, it was pretty much all fun. In ways, I thank God that alcohol was around. Because I have something much deeper, which is a spiritual sickness, and alcohol will actually treat that sickness, you know? So, growing up, you know, it gave me something to cling to, some sort of sense of comfort, you know? And I had a good time drinking for a long time. Up until, you know, my 20s, where I started experiencing the wonderful cocktail, you know, and I started drinking hard liquor, and it wasn't too long before I started experiencing blackouts, which our book talks about, that never occurs in the average drinker, right? But I'm blacking out now on a regular basis, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I had no connection to any kind of program or solution. I was scared. I remember I called my family. You know, they tried to get me in counseling. I went to a bunch of kind of like, you know, oh, I don't know what you'd say, but counselors that just weren't really, you know, they didn't understand. They weren't educated on the disease of alcoholism. And they tried their best, but I just couldn't get anywhere. Until finally, I got to the age of 29, and I just had it, you know. There was, at this point, alcohol there, it wasn't like it was in high school or anything like that. It was just complete chaos. I isolated myself from everybody that I loved, and I had a failed suicide attempt when I was 29. But that suicide attempt actually was the beginning of a little bit of a change, because I was put into, I don't know if anybody's been to a sanitarium before, but they're a lot of fun, you know. They give you just about any pill you want, though. That was kind of the nice part, you know. I was really medicated in there. But, you know, I remember there was a counselor in there who said, you know, you can either go on like this, Eric, or you can accept help. And that's actually something that the big book talks about, you know, that we can accept help, you know, spiritual help, or go on to the bitter end. And, I started getting help, and I kind of hit the skids for a while and treatment centers. And I finally got sober, I actually got sober for a couple of years. I went back to school. I actually did well. I got certified. I went back and got my diploma. I ended up you know, completing treatment, the whole, I went through I was in Pine for 4 months. I did like 9 months sober living. And, when I got out of there, I actually got a job working for Central Valley Recovery Services, and then I got a job working for the Rescue Mission, and I was like, you know, just full on. I was working a program. I had a really good sponsor. You know, I was starting to get reconnected with my family. I had made some amends. And I just kept climbing up that ladder. You know, it's kind of like Bill Wilson in the story. It was never enough. Like, I just wanted more and more. You know what I mean? It was just like super recovery. In fact, I was doing recovery so much that it's just all I could see. You know, I kind of, it's all I really did. And I ended up moving up the ladder pretty quickly, and I got hired on through the county, through Floyd County Mental Health, and I had my own office, and a freaking gold plaque said my name on it. You know, it was just like, I've arrived, this is shit, you know what I mean? Like, people are coming to me, people are waiting in the lobby asking to see me, you know, and I'm going to tell them how, you know, to get well. But, man, I started burning out from the inside. You know, that's all I can explain. I started drifting away from my program, what was laid out in the book. You know, everybody wants to feel, well, you know, when you relapse, why do you do it? Well, I mean, why does a dog bark or a fish swim or whatever? I'm an alcoholic, you know? My default is to drink. And the minute I get disconnected from God and the program, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm really clear on that, you know? And so after multiple years of sobriety, I drifted away. I quit that job. I ended up just kind of by myself, not knowing what I was going to do. I went into business, which actually served me well. I made way more money doing business than I was making in counseling. So I was doing pretty good. But like I said, I got away from the program, and this thought just drifted into my head. Is like, it was David read it earlier in the third chapter 3. It's, you know, the great obsession of every humble drinker. The great obsession started coming back in my head. You know what? Maybe I was making too big of a deal of the alcohol part, especially like the beer part, right? Like, I'm looking around, you know, I was in business now, so I was seeing people drink like on the job, and I was seeing people, you know, it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. Or maybe, you know, us in recovery were just shunning alcohol, making it too. And I remember I would walk my dog around the park every morning when I would, and I would just stop, started coming, and it was like, you know, maybe I can drink beer. And I suffered some pretty major physical pain. I had an injury, plus I have a chronic physical condition that's been diagnosed now. But I didn't really know what it was, and I ended up taking some meds, some narcotic medication, which, you know, I won't share too much about here because it's AA, but you know, that's another issue that I have. And that just exacerbated that thought of, you know, I was kind of not really getting too out of control with the pain meds, and I thought, you know, maybe I could drink. And not only that, it's like one thing that sucks about running out of alcohol or running out of drugs, you know, is that part where you run out. and I was starting to experience that, right? Like, I couldn't make the pills really last, and if I just supplement like 3 or 4 beers in there at night, then I'd just be perfect, right? And, you know, I can still go to church, and I can still, you know, believe in God, and I can still do these, I can still help people, but, you know, I could just pull it off. Well, I attempted to do it, man. I can't tell you guys, well, some of you know, but what it's like to take a drink of beer after being sober for 6.5 years, that alone was a spiritual experience. That was, you know, not in the really the good time, but it was just, I was really hoping that, I remember I went to the store and I just got one Heineken, 22 ounces, and I was thinking, I'm just going to drink the one, and I was really hoping that when I would drink it, I wouldn't experience what I experienced before, which was wanting another one. And I drank it, and I was about halfway down, and that craving hit me, and I wanted another beer, you know? It's like, shit, you know? Man, 6.5 years didn't give me any more power than I had, you know, years before. And I didn't go back to the store, I didn't buy another beer, but the ball was rolling, so to speak. And I started drinking more and more often, and then, you know, I don't have to tell you guys the rest. Most of you guys know that I am a real alcoholic. The big book talks about the difference between a social drinker, right? A moderate drinker, or a hard drinker, and a real alcoholic. And, you know, given a sufficient reason, a hard drinker or a moderate drinker can stop. And I got to the point where I needed to stop, and I couldn't. And a few life things happened, and the next thing I knew, man, I was in my apartment, literally waking up. My first breath, my first thought was, where is the bottle that I had the night before? And I was no longer drinking Heineken. You know, I was drinking whiskey mainly, you know. And whiskey, I don't even know if you should be classified as alcohol. Whiskey is like a whole different drug, you know. It's like, that should be in its own class of drug, because it just takes you somewhere else, man. I was that alcoholic. I'd finally become, you know, that alcoholic man that was waking up and drinking whiskey. And even in my prior drinking, I'd never been like that. I was a periodic. I would binge drink, you know. So here I am, and man, I was awesome. But here's one of the big things about AA, and is that when you're in AA for a while and you disappear, man, most people, they don't forget about you, you know. And you have this resource, man, that is so amazing. And so when I was down in that desperate spot, I did, the only thing I knew how to do was I called people from AA, you know? And we got another visitor, so bring them on in. Welcome.
Hey. Nice to see you.
That's this.
Oh, with my hair.
Yeah. So... Yeah, thanks a lot. It threw me way off. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. When I was 12, I did that. I did what I knew how to do, which is reach back to AA. I was part of a group. It was a religious group. It wasn't AA. It was a different fellowship. But two of the members came in 12-step meeting. And I was in and out of blackouts. I don't remember that well, but I kind of made the deal with them. Like, I don't want to get a treatment, but what I will do is I'll go to AA meetings. And if I drink one beer while I'm going to those meetings, then you guys can send me the treatment. I'll go wherever you want. I don't care. So I started going to meetings, and I was detoxing in meetings, which, you know, isn't a whole lot of fun. I would rather been, you know, at wine or somewhere that have cable or, you know, somewhere more comfortable. But, you know, that's all I knew. That's all I knew was just how to go back. And this was pre-COVID. So, you know, the meetings were still cracking. And, you know, I started looking around, and actually this guy over here, I don't know if I'm in any crosstalk, but there's a guy here sitting right here right now. He was in the meetings. And I ended up calling his sponsor, and talking to his sponsor, and we talked about, I said, hey, you think he might take me through the work? And so, you know, going back to the steps, and his sponsor said, yeah, give him a call. And I called him, and I went over to his house, and he started doing the work out of this book, and just drastically changed my life, you know? So I got a little bit of stability under me. The detoxes kind of wore off. I started right into step one, and I hit some skids. I definitely hit a couple skids, especially early off. You know, Robert Hoover's app, you know, so there was a couple times where I called him and I messed up, you know. I drank a few times, and I was just walking around, going back to that same park where I thought about drinking, now sober, walking in circles, going, God, I don't want to drink anymore, you know, but I just kept pushing. With the work, I just kept on pushing, man, and eventually the obsession lifted, you know, and I got a step one, and, you know, I saw my truth like I'd never seen before. You know, I'm that real alcoholic, there's no question, you know, and the cool thing about the big book is the same thing as when you read the book and you go through the book, you might have read it yesterday or you might have read it 2 years ago. But it's always like a brand new experience. It's true how that works. And I saw that out in the doctor's opinion, you know, how they talk about men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Right? But we can't differentiate the truth from the false. And I saw that. And once I took a drink, you know, I thought I was drinking because I wanted to be drinking. But the truth was I I was actually drinking because of this physical craving that I didn't have power over. Right? And I would wake up just like every day swearing it off with that remorse, swearing off for good and all, you know? And then finding myself drunk again, going, how did I do it? Right? I'm that alcoholic. And then beyond that, you know, I have the obsession, the chronic mind of an alcoholic, which is where, again, we can see into our innermost self. You know, I thought that, I don't know about you guys, but I always thought that if you just get sober, that will keep you sober. If that makes sense. If you just go to rehab for 30 days, or if you just get a year under your belt, that alone, that will be enough to just know how to be sober. That's how I always thought, but that's not the truth. The truth is I can't run away from the diseases in my mind, and it takes daily treatment. That was another thing. There's a speaker that I like, and you know, I know Robert likes it too, and his name's Mark Houston, and I listened to a lot of Mark Houston, and he would just say, you know, I drink every day, you gotta be in the book every day, you know, and he's just like this great speaker, and you know, and that's one thing that changed for me. I wasn't in the big book once a week, or you know, every once in a while in a book study. I was in it every day, even by myself, alone at home, opening it up, even if I would say one or two prayers. And I would say the first step prayer, even after I got through the first step, I would still say things like, I'd wake up in the morning and say, God, you know, I'm a real alcoholic, please keep me sober today. Simple as that, you know, because that's just the truth. And I just go to God every day, every day, every day. And, you know, God started showing me some truth and kept me sober. Step two, so now I go to build this relationship with God. And we all come in here and we know everything about God. Right? You can't tell me anything about God, or you can't tell me anything about how there is God, right? And I had to break that down. I had to look at a lot of the preconceived ideas I had about God. But for me, it was mainly what I learned as a kid, you know, in church, and this sort of this dogmatic God. That, you know, you had to pray a certain way. You had to attend certain religious bodies. You know, you couldn't do certain things, otherwise you were damned, you know? And that's definitely not the God that I experienced in step two. I started feeling like there was a God that was more of like a, I don't know, he's more like a friend. Or more like how we are in AA, you know? You could have somebody in AA like cussing and smoking a cigarette, but they still love you. You know, it's like, there's no judgment. It's just like pure love. And that's kind of how I feel like God is. And I said my prayers today are a lot different. Like, I'll just say prayers randomly, or I just feel like God's sitting here next to me instead of like going to this religious body to have to find God. And in step two, I started feeling something too. In step two, I'll talk about is that because of my condition, I still was taking certain medications. And in step two, I started feeling an overwhelming desire to titrate off those. And that began, and I struggled with it. It was tough. And but I was able to do it through the help of God, you know. And that's a huge part of, you know, why I'm here and happy and healthy today. Is because some of my outside issues I'm treating the right way. You know, and I'm going to the right professionals that can help me the way I need to be helped, you know? So when I made the decision in step three to turn it over, it's a lot easier to turn it over to God when you actually have a God that you like, you know? It's like going to work for somebody. You just don't walk in the building and say, I'm ready to work, I'll sign up, you know? If you walk in the building and they show you around a little bit and go, okay, this is the break room, you're going to be doing this, this is what your schedule looks like, these are your coworkers, blah, 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 and explain, then you decide, okay, yeah, let's do it. Right? You just don't walk in. So I knew this God. I was cool with him, and I'm like, I looked at that part of, you know, for a long time I'd been that, like the book talks about, in step three, it talks about, you know, that I'm the ultimate director, you know? I'm the ultimate actor that wants to be the director, ends up being the producer of confusion rather than harmony. That's what it talks about in step three. And it talks about a requirement in step three. The first requirement is that, you know, any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So I had to look at that. Do I really want to keep trying? How successful have I been running my life on Eric's self-will. Not that successful. You know, maybe in some areas, but as far as alcohol and relationships and, you know, misery, depression, things like this, like, I have not been, you know, an A student. You know, I'm flunking that and I need help. And so, you know, I'm okay to turn it over to God. And, you know, we did the third step prayer, like, on our knees, and that gave me the power to go get into inventory. And inventory, I wrote a lot. I'm a writer, you know, I'm not like a, I'm like Shakespeare writer, but I'm like a writer, like I just like to write, you know what I mean? Like I write, when I start writing, I just write a lot. And so inventory for me, I just started writing a ton. And, you know, I was shown a certain way how to do it out of the book, you know, how to do all the four column inventory. You know, the resentment, the cause, and then the seven areas of self that it affects. And then the realization on the backside. And really, I think the inventory, most of it is about that realization. Because you're looking at, okay, you know, John Doe hurt me. You know, I'm resentful at John Doe, you know, because he you know, he manipulated and conned me and talked poorly about me. And I look at all these areas that it affects, but then I flip it over to the side and I go, how did I affect John Doe? What did I do to him? Well, I manipulated him, conned him, and stole his money. You know what I mean? I did the same shit to him or people around me. And so it's like, okay, I'm kind of delusional to think that the world's just out to hurt me and that I'm perfect, you know? That's not the case. And when you see those, the big book calls it chunks of truth about yourself. So I'm seeing these huge chunks about myself, chunks of truth, going, oh my gosh, man, I'm so delusional. Even the delusion of thinking that I could drink again, right? These delusions, my mind is like, a really bad spot, you know? And I need God's help to see the truth. In the inventory, there's a note in the workbook that we use, and it says, you know, when I'm involved in my inventory and I'm writing it down on paper, you know, I can see the truth, basically. Right? But when I'm not in my inventory, I'm never going to see the truth. Unless I put it on paper, I'm just never going to see the truth. You know? I'm always going to be in some sort of delusion. And so, I just started cracking on the inventory. Then I went through the fear inventory, and then the sex inventory, which was a good one because that's been a huge problem area for me. You know, just being honest, speaking from the heart. That's all I thought I had a tough time. In relationships, it's always been a spot for me where I just haven't been thoughtful of others, mindful of others, you know? And that's not a good way to live. In fact, the book tells you that you'll drink again if you're not careful, you know, careful in that area. And so I've had that experience. And the book also says that these are facts. In that area, because these are facts, not a theory. And I can live to tell you that is a fact. If you're not careful of the people you know, you're in relationships with and treating them right, you know, you're probably going to drink again. I know that at least that's my truth. And so, got that done, I finally finished it, basically. So that inventory was really long, and it was tedious, and sometimes it took my energy, and sometimes I felt like crap afterwards, but sometimes I felt good. But regardless of how I felt, it did the job. You know, it's like, whoa. Yesterday. So yesterday, I did the part where you tell your secrets. you write everything down, right? You write everything down, you got it all out, and then you're like, no, okay, what's the shit you didn't write down? Oh no. In the book, the big book says we gotta illuminate. It's illuminate. I think of the flashlight shining on all my garbage. Now, one thing I have hidden back in the closet, I thought nobody saw or nobody would ever have to see. So, you know, he shared some of his with me, which of course makes breaks the ground a little bit. And then I had a list actually that I had written. You know, I went ahead and wrote all my secrets out. And I have like, you know, 15 or so, I think. And, you know, I just read them and just, you know, just get it out. And it's amazing how when you fix stuff, that stuff, how how good you feel afterwards. I mean, it really is like, man, it's just, you feel cleansed. You feel like, man, I don't have to carry that around anymore. It's just out of my system, you know? It's just such a simple exercise, but it works so, so good. But I think it was effective because I had been through all of the process before. You know, I couldn't just jump right into that. I would have never been honest. You know, I would have never been able to really tell the truth. I would have still kept stuff to myself. You know, because that's just the way I am. And so then I spent an hour of quiet time by myself, and I looked at my inventory, and I found all the defects of character. Well, a lot of the defects of character that I have that I'm not necessarily willing to turn over to God. And I wrote those down, and then I shared those. So I'm praying for the willingness, you know. A lot of my defects of character I really cling to, you know, eating what I want, you know, sleeping what I want, being comfortable, you know, all these things that I'd like to do to feel good all the time, you know, isn't necessarily going to serve God. So I have to be ready to do that, you know. And so where I'm at currently is I'm making a list. So I already have most of my list in my inventory, and that's the people I've harmed, and I'll set out to make those amends, you know. I'm pretty clear on the harms. I'm sure there's some people that I haven't written down yet that I'll add to the list, you know. But I'm really excited about making the amends, because I think that, you know, when I had that time of sobriety and I ended up drinking again, that's one area I definitely stopped doing. I stopped making amends. You know, I made one or two. I made some really powerful amends in the past. I got to make amends to my grandparents before they died. I got to make amends to my dad. I made amends to my dad. And I did all these things, but I just stopped. I did a couple of amends, and they felt really good. You know, and I felt good. And so I just, like, you know, I don't have to make the other ones, but that's not the truth. I know what it's like to get stuck there, so I'm not going to get stuck this time. You know, I'm going to pile through these things, and I'll pray for the willingness. If I don't have it, I'll pray for it, and I'll get it. I'll get these amends done, because now, just like I have these secrets inside of me, the way I feel, the weight that I feel on me now is all these, this unfinished amends that I have, you know, because I see it in my inventory. I can see the money I owe, you know what I mean, the damage I've caused, the relationships that I need to rebuild. And now I can see that all, right? So I want to go set that straight, you know? And anyway, with that said, I'll just close up by saying, you know, it's, to be sitting here and be sober and meeting AA, man, you know, I didn't know if it ever happened again, you know, but it did. And it just shows the kind of God that we serve. You know, if you're hearing this message and you don't think that God loves you or has, you know, something in store for you, you know, you're wrong. He does. You know, whatever that thing you're struggling with is, whether it's after drinking or drugs or, you know, a relationship or being a parent or, you know, whatever it is, man, God has good things in store for you. You know, and it's my job to come and at least share what he's done for me. You know, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but I would strongly suggest taking a look at the book and finding somebody and going through it, because it can change your life. So with that said, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're now starting the discussion part of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many people as possible, so please limit your sharing to allow for this. I'll turn the meeting back over to Eric, who can pick people to share. And then we also have people on screen too, but I'm not sure how to get a hold of them.
You don't know how to get a hold of them. Okay.
I can load it.
Okay.
Well, Eric, it's actually you get. Okay. You wanna?
Oh, you wanna list names that were here?
Very fluent in Zoom.
Oh, cool.
So we have 9 people on here. Yeah, Stacy, Denise, Irene, John.
Why don't we do this? We'll start. Get somebody here, and then we'll go Zoom. So we go here. We'll like back and forth. Yeah. So let's start with Robert, and then we'll hopefully everybody here gets a chance to share. We'll show that.
94 months.
Okay. Yeah. You should get everything.
Hi. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert.
Good to be here. Doesn't want to take too much time. I want, you know, to give everybody an opportunity. I want to thank Eric for sharing this meeting, you know, for inviting me to come here. Did a great job, man. Really smash-up job. It's just, I got chills a couple of times just listening to you talk, man, you know. It's just, you know, just like you said, man, I was seeing him in meetings when he was freaking still detoxing off that sick run, looking like 8 Mile with the hoodie on and shit, just kind of like in the back of the team. And something, you know, I don't know what it was, but I saw him in like 3 weeks in a row. I had time off from school and work, and it was just like God thing, you know. But yeah, it's been a great journey, you know. You know, we've been through little bits of ups and downs, just like you mentioned, you know. But man, just look where you're at now. Just see where you're at now compared to where you were at when you started, man. It's just, like you said, it's all about the book. It's all about God, you know. It's all about the power of the process, you know. It's definitely nothing I could have done. The best thing I can ever do is just redirect you to the outline format or redirect you to see God. And that's what you did, man. You know, you definitely, through the titration of meds and through other issues, you continually turn to God, you know, and the instructions in the book, you know. And that's what it is, man. You know, I'm a big book thumper. You know, I'm big on the circle and triangle. That's the first thing I usually go with somebody when I sponsor somebody is talking about, you know, commitment to working the steps, commitment to a home group, and commitment to service and working with others. You know, and that's the biggest thing, man. You know, I think you'll agree. That's the ticket right there. You know, I went for one of his early slips, you know, because he was, and I'll give it to him. I mean, he had a lot of physical pain and things going on, but that's one thing. It's like, you got this other disease, you know, that demands to be treated, you know, and it's like, is there any good reason to not be in the circle and triangle that you can think of now? It's like, you know, kind of like a little bit of a, you know, reality check, you know, but man, you've come a long way. Awesome experience yesterday, you know, hearing your fifth step and everything like that, dude. You know, good, honest fifth step. I mean, I have no doubt. It's really awesome. That's what I like getting into the part of the process for your inventory. Because that's where, like, you know, I consider that, like, steps 1 and 4, like, the big truth steps, you know, where your mind kind of starts getting blown when you snap out of delusion and you really are seeing these big chunks of truth about yourself. And I really got to see, you know, you have that, you know, with a lot of family members, things that start to fall in place and make sense after years of, you know, chaos, man. And to know that you're going to outgrow that, you know, you're going to outgrow all that kind of stuff, and you're going to be carrying an awakened spirit into these relationships and make amends, and it's going to be on a whole different footing now, you know. And it's just an awesome, awesome thing to be a part of. It's an awesome thing to see it, you know, that this process can be replicated and reproduced in other people. You know, and that's what AA's been all about since 1939, you know, since it came out. We're part of a great legacy of one book that came out that's changed millions and millions of countless lives, you know. So anyway, man, I love you. I'm proud of you, man. That's all I got to say.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Right, where's that list?
Yeah.
So first of all, this is Irene.
Yeah. So Irene?
Oh, hi. I'm actually observing, if that's okay.
Okay. She wants to observe. She wants to observe.
Okay. Okay. Let's go with Stacy.
Stacy?
Yep.
Hi, I'm Stacy. I'm grateful to be here. Your share is very interesting. And it's definitely a lot to take on, and I'm very tired tonight, so you'll have to excuse me. We're actually quarantining right now because one of our son's classmates was exposed to COVID, and we're not vaccinated because we've had reactions to vaccines before, so either have to be monitored at the hospital or through an allergist and also have the risk of contracting it. Plus, the air quality right now is not in my favor, and can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, I feel like I'm yelling and nasally. And, you know, I'm an outdoors person. Like, I grew up in Riverside County in between Palm Springs and San Diego. And Grew up in a 3,200 square foot house on a couple of acres overlooking the Suburban Indian Reservation and the Eastern Municipal Water District. So we didn't really have neighbors either, you know, so much growing up. Like, my best friends live like a few acres over. But it was fun too, you know, and then I lived in Big Bear for like 3 years, so I got spoiled on that, you know, down south in San Bernardino. And actually, when I first moved there, I had to evacuate. I just got my cute little cabin and a job at a bar there that had been open since the late 1800s. And so that was pretty surreal, because when I evacuated, I had to put up my little curtain in my bedroom window on the second floor to alert the sheriff that I was gone, my dogs and I. And I was packing everything, my dad's ashes, everything that I could grab. And I'm driving down the mountain and, you know, ashes are going on my car, my Yukon, like snow. And I keep thinking about this old couple that they had announced passed away on the radio, that they were in San Diego because there was fires going on there also. You know, California, we've been on fire since 89, I think, after the last few floods when I was a kid. Well, we still get some of those. I don't mean to bounce back and forth, but being stuck inside has me going back to that a lot. And I think of that older couple that couldn't start their car because the oxygen wasn't getting to the engine. And then the last two fires, you know, we've had people in our meetings that have lost everything to these fires. And there was another story that stuck in my head, which was the grandmother and the grandson that were in the vehicle, and the mom was trying to save them, and she couldn't. And she survived outside of it. And the husband just happened to walk up and is like, "I'm looking for my wife. Where are you?" And she's like, "I'm your wife. Here's what happened." And I couldn't imagine what these people are going, you know, have gone through or going through, have to evacuate, even though we're stuck in basically, which feels like that movie Silent Hill. Like, we're kind of stuck in hell right now, you know? And I'm grateful I'm not drinking right now, that's for sure. I'm too scared to drink. I've had a few incidences that could have ruined my life and my family's life forever. It's been in our family a long time. And just not having that anxiety hanging over my head the last few years with all this crap going on is just amazing. And hearing your story, how you just kept turning to God and He's right there. I love that you're not looking for Him. And that you know He's there. Because He's been in front of your face the whole time. You know, like, "Here I am, buddy. You know, just take my hand. You know, I'm here to hold you." And one of my old friends that actually, they live up near where I used to live down south up in the mountains, had given me a plaque. And I'll end it with this. It's still in my bathroom. And it's the footsteps, you know, in the sand, footprints in the sand, where the man is walking along and he sees the worst parts of his life, where he only sees the one set of steps in the sand, you know? And he's like, "Well, where were you? You know, everything was so messed up right here. You weren't there. I needed you. These were the worst, most rock bottom times of my life." And he's like, "Well, these were the times I carried you." And that's what you made me think of tonight. So instead of being in despair and, yes, I'm stuck inside, we can't really go outside because asthma and ailments and everything, finish what I need to do inside, and just really grateful that we can still do these online meetings, even quarantine. And I appreciate those of you that have hosted it. Thank you. I'm Stacey, alcoholic.
Thank you, Stacey. Dave, okay.
Yeah, Dave Alcoholics.
Hi, Dave.
Welcome. So, yesterday, I was having this thing with spiritual awakening, and talking to my sponsor, you know, he told me, or I asked him, you know, I feel like my entire life's been a spiritual experience. He said, pretty much in one way or another, it kind of has, you know, but he told me that where to go in the book, kind of read up on it, and he gave me an explanation of it, you know, in appendix 2. I never looked that far back in the book, you know. I've had, you know, a few sponsors, and I haven't wearing my glasses. I've had a few glasses, you know, on the back of myself. You know, I've had some great sponsors, some awesome sponsors, you know. But it's a spiritual experience that God consciousness. You know, I always thought that I got to hold up. You know, I got raised in church, you know, Sunday school, and had all this, you know, church time with my grandma, and thought that I had that connection with the spiritual being, God, you know. And it's really an appendix too, and the God consciousness of me, you know, and that state of mind that explains about the change, you know, is something I never got to have a hold of. And kept, you know, I was walking away. This church, Bible studies, was always the first thing that I always disconnected from. I would probably find, been through there 5 times. Church was something I always ended up dropping as first connection before I ended up stopped volunteering and being connected to that recovery home. So I know now today that that right there is a key. It's not like one of the keys. For me, it's key. This is number one. It's the first thing that I would keep connected with is God. And that spiritual connection, that God's consciousness to help me go through, you know, this process. And I'm very grateful today for AA, and for God never being my side person for most of all. You know, without a doubt, I should be in prison or in cats. All these things I've been through, put myself through my life. Today I got a couple days for 2 months. I've been in and out of recovery since 2016. You know, I could never stand the same. Keep coming back. And I hear it every week, keep coming back, you know? And nice to see you, keep coming back. And, you know, I'm hoping you're fine. You know, sometimes you're going to be alone 3 times a day. So it's like, hey, yeah, I'm going to see you in a couple hours, you know? Come back, finish your back, you know, yeah, I'm on Friday night, spend it twice, and candlelight meeting, it's like, you come over to my house, you know, and it's like 10 o'clock at the candlelight, you know, and I couldn't stand it, but I couldn't stand it because I never listened to that message, I never paid attention to it, I didn't hear it, you know, this time around, I sat down and I dissected it, keep coming back, and it's like my buddy told me, it's like, there's not really much to dissect, but there is. It's just there to dissect like I do my book. You know, I'll read something, and then I'll read it again, and then I'll read it again. And I ended up underlining and highlighting and putting notes almost everywhere. So it's like, you know, that's what my last sponsor, you know, I almost need like a 5 gallon bucket of highlighter just to dip it in there. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, consider that's what my book looks like. But the keep coming back for it. He's like, there's a lot there to dissect. I'm like, it's 3 words. He's going to keep coming back. 3 words. He's like, just think about it. It's like, I never listened to it. I've never heard it. I never thought about it. Like, he was explaining it to me. So, this time, you know, I know for a fact, you know, I'm going to keep on. You know, I'm going to keep on going back to my meetings. I'm going to keep on going back to pine. I'm going to keep on going to church and the Bible studies and everything. Keeps me in contact with God. And first and foremost, I'm going to keep on coming back because I don't want to die. You know, I don't want to live out there in that misery. Or in the prison that I had. So, you know, God willing, you know, I'm going to get this thing right this time. And if I don't, I'm going to keep on coming back. That's all I got.
Thank you. Oh,
so, John William. John W.
Now you're wondering who I am, right? Sorry about that. I got my phone to turn. something here. Anyway, John calling from Switzerland over in Interlaken.
Hello, John.
It's good to be over here. We're on vacation. We're just sleeping. It's like 5 a.m. here right now. And so I couldn't sleep, so I thought I'd hit a meeting and saw Bill's meeting, saw the meeting for the speaker meeting going on, and thought I'd check it out. Anyway, hi to everyone. Hello. And like your message, Eric. They talk about the inventory process. It's so cool because it's, that's the nuts and bolts of it all, for me. Someone was saying about, and then mentioned about service work by the first person after Eric got done was, it's important. I know service work is important. For me, peeling away that onion, and doing the inventory process on me was so important. But, for an alcoholic, though, and I'd like to say welcome to newcomers, too, welcome to anyone relatively new. But please understand the inventory process, what they talk about is the inventory process, or all the whole the process of doing it all might sound like it's Greek to people, and it sounded like Greek to me for a long time. And the only way you get it done is by doing it. Just do the best you can, and like they say, progress not perfection. And just by doing that, we can progress toward a better, toward a better self that way. And, a better program and a better understanding of ourselves. And really, the inventory process, it also involves the fact of finding out why we did the things we did, it's really an important eye-opening experience for me. It was, and keeps on being an eye-opening experience for me, even at 35 years of sobriety, because I am, by doing the 10th step, I can also keep on feeling with the onion. And pretty much nowadays, I know what the problem is. The problem is me. But, getting in the way or getting hurt feelings or just trying to act out. I've had a few, traveling's been a real chore here in Switzerland because it's, the trains are neat and stuff, but I tell you, taking around 2 weeks of luggage, trying to carry around 2 weeks of luggage through a terminal and on the train and stuff and on the buses is, and on the, cobblestone streets over here is kind of tough. So, I've been really, really frustrated lately and, acted out a few times with my wife and I feel bad about doing that and I have to stop. And of course, mentioning it right now and verbalizing it out to you guys is a good way of stopping it also because the cat's out of the bag, right? That's what the inventory process also were the fifth step. Sharing with another person, with another alcoholic is, like the sponsor, is, so key to getting rid of this stuff. Because, getting rid of the stuff is what we're trying to do, right? And, getting rid of our character defects or toning them down to the point, toning the character defects down to the point where we become more manageable and more a part of the human race and, more at one with God, and trying to do God's will. I think by doing that, that's the key for me. That's the real, benefit of doing the steps. Because you see, why would I do the steps if there's no benefit, right? Why would I do these things if there's no benefit of doing them? Because, it's a little bit of work, and a little bit of doing things that we're not really, I don't know of any alcoholic community, Alcoholics Anonymous who has done the inventory process before getting into AA. It's a neat deal, but it's so crucial to find out who we are, finding out how our character defects have blocked us from the sunlight of the spirit, and having a good life. And today I'm having a great life, I'm happy and content, and I'm still going places, Because in sobriety, you'll go places you never thought you would go before. I never thought I would come back to Europe, came here when I was 9 years old with my family. But, we're visiting a town, one town, Basel, in a few days. And, we went there, when I was a kid. So we're going to do some retracing of that. And, AA has allowed me that. AA and my higher power, my God, has allowed me to do these things. And, thank God for AA and thank God for God, thank God for the inventory process. Thank God for service. Cause the service, one more thing, is the service has been able to let me be a part of a group, be accepted, and be a part of a group, and be and have actually comrades in AA, you know, Bill and I have done things and in AA, and we've seen each other at service functions, and like service fairs. I don't know if they're having any service fairs at all, but GSO is having service fairs very much anymore, but because of COVID and stuff. But if there's a convention you can go to, if there's a roundup or whatever they call it, Bakersfield has a roundup every now and then, but there's stuff going over on over in Laughlin, an AA roundup or AA convention, or wherever you go, LA or Vegas or wherever the convention is, or even in Tulare at the that place over on Quarter Street, the a spiritual center. We had a function over there one time for general service, and that was, you know, and it's all oftentimes it's a lot of free food also. It's you know, there's also a little bait involved with it also, but you know, if you go to that thing and be involved, find out about service work and find out about the service structure and how AA works, you know, it's just a wonderful way to get involved with AA and be like, you can really realize that AA is not just AA meetings, you know, it's sponsorship, it's working with others, as that person said. This is what Bill and Bob did in the beginning, you know, that's how those two guys, that's how AA started, was through those two guys talking to each other, you know, and being of service to each other, and then they went out from there and was of service to others, you know, and then it just mushroomed from there. AA was going to gangbusters when I first got sober back in the 80s, but it's kind of slowed down now for per capita. It's kind of, the growth has kind of slowed down. And,
went back to it, huh?
Yesterday, yeah. Oh. The way this last field goal was a few seconds.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm done. Anyway, thank you, and I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
John.
Thank you, John.
And then Zach.
Yeah.
Tapped out, like wrestling, man. Tag team.
Maybe I'm not coaching.
Thanks.
Jake here, sorry for I'm not lost the signal. I could go by the theater and say, I'm going to go to the
hospital.
I stopped right there. The Matt stopped me right here at the corner and he said, you're here. I looked around like, okay, I look across to you and I see her too. So that's it. That's my since signs are always different, you need them, huh? Mm-hmm. So there you go. She's too important. Just a battle. Take care of and share what I heard from what the person heard. But I didn't hear about it when you're 12, though.
When I was 12,
that's the best part,
right? Right? When I was 12, I was here before that. It's like fourth grade. It doesn't help that you were fourth grade, but it's pretty good to say that much. But, you know, like Dave was saying, you know, it's three words. Those are just like second living like that. I had the same experience with a Kings Bleed. And now I'm reading myself to sort of insanity that first three words. A buddy of an older gentleman, he told me, he said, now think about that. Came to believe. Now think about that really hard. You know, and he was just like, think about that really hard. When you get it, call back. And he had just left us. And I assume he just left us in Florida, you know. I was having a hard time with that, you know, because I had made my history say that those three gentlemen that I lived with were my higher power at the time, you know. Like, and I wouldn't suggest that to anybody else, having a person as a higher power, but it worked for me. and so I was having a hard time because I had let them go, you know what I mean? And other. And I think that he was new. And I was just like, get it, and then he told me to go in the office, and the
there's a AA book in there, small stuff and cats and sticky notes and stuff all over it. And it was his wife that passed away, so it was hers. And in it, we opened it up, you know, and found all those little notes and stuff like that. And it broke it down, came to me, you know. And I was like, wow. It was like came to you, that you came, you know. When you came to AA, when you realize that this is a problem, like, I have a problem, you know, and you're just like, I have a problem, you're just still getting drunk, and then still getting to do, but you know, it's in your brain that you know you have a problem, it's a problem, you know, and came to AA. You know what I mean? It's like, you came to do something about your problem, and Believe. So when you come in that time, maybe in the beginning, I don't know who did it first, you know, like, oh yes, this is for me, you know what I mean? That wasn't the case for me, but it just kept coming back. It kept a lot. Just a lot. I didn't drink and five proof. You know, and it's like, it's, you came to believe that this program is going to, like, this fellowship that book in it, and everything all in it around it, like, it's going to work for you, you know, if you allow it, you know, if you put in the footwork, if you do the work, you know, when you take suggestions. I load my memory bank every day, in a meeting with everything, you know what I mean, because I would say I'm a sponge, I soak it all up and I squeeze it out when I need it, you know? Because if it applies to me, I use it. And if it don't, I'll probably use it later. I'm just a baby, you know what I mean? It's crazy how three words can mean so much, you know? And this fellowship is great, it's strong. If you allow it to be, you know, if you're reluctant or standoffish or whatever, you know, it's difficult. But this fellowship is so much love and non-judgment, like, you know, like you're saying, that if you go out, you come back, and they still open you with open arms, you know what I mean? You fall off and like, Bill, they don't let you go, like, I'm not letting you go, you know what I mean? And they'll save your life, you know? And it's wonderful. I love this fellowship. I love being of service. I didn't realize how much I thrive for service until COVID got me. I was just sitting at home. I swear to God, I was like, I was going crazy, like, I even joined some meetings from different places, like New Orleans, where they call their, before the meeting on Zoom, they call it the parking lot. I love that, though. That was it for me. I said, I'm staying. It's just like, it's wide. It's worldwide. You know what I mean? It's those places you never would have thought of. You never could imagine. I mean, that my ex and Bill, they've been to the same a lot of love in Oregon, you know, it's crazy, you know, it's amazing, actually, and I am so grateful for the people in this program, and everything about it, and learning things every day, and I guess I have been, what do you call, like, very, behind, like, in the back, like, it's not a problem, because the problem is us. We have a problem, being we have so many freaking problems, it's unbelievable. I know, you could work on those things, you know. One thing I just said wasn't working, I hadn't been working on it, is my patience with my mother, for one, indeed. Combined in one house, they drove me nuts, bananas, and I started, like, noticing, like, getting irritated and, like, I'm chasing myself. And then that person, you know, she's smarter. I never realized how smart she was. You know, she's smart as hell. And she literally has been raised in this program. Literally, like, you know, and she sits there and you pray. She tries to pray with us, you know, and that right there is wonderful because I'm confident that my child is gonna be contained and raised in a good environment. I mean, for herself, me being her mother, probably the best thing for her. You know, I mean, it's amazing. She's got more free time than I do. Yeah, it really does. It's just wonderful. I mean, and just realizing those things, realization, you know what I mean, is, I know that's been a big part of your realization, her being doing morning meetings and stuff, and that right there is like mind blowing kind of sometimes, a lot of times. And it's like you start to be able to catch yourself. I guess what is how to say it, the book they call it, they say it. You start to notice before your character's best come in effect, you know, intention, you nurture those, before, so before you get there, before you jump off the edge, and it's that, when you start doing that, when you start, redirecting yourself, these to task, to distract, catastrophize, whatever, I don't know in my heart, but I know I do them all the time. I definitely do. It was just like 2 weeks ago, I totally had me locked down, and I was starting cleaning the house, and just, arranging the house, it came, everything cleaned up, and I mean, it was chill for a year. It's been exactly the same. My other brother was there with his family, and stuff's been the same. Stuff's here, honey, and ours, and just everywhere, and I started, going through it, doing all that, and making paper for my baby, and in the freezer, literally frozen over the back of the freezer, and I'm like, there's no room, it's frozen over, like the deep freezer, and started shipping that away, and there's a bottle of Jack, there's a bottle of Fireball and a bottle of Jack in there, and Fireball was frozen, and Jack wasn't, and I was like, and see here me, an alcoholic, I'm like, I was frustrated, and I wanted to drink it. I left it there. It broke out, but I left it there. And I went to a meeting, and the whole meeting, everything that everyone was saying, I just felt like out there, like, hey, it's you. Hey, you. Talk to you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sort of felt like it. That's the wonders of this program. Like, you know, it saved me pretty much. I mean, so after me, I talked to my sponsor, and she's like, well, maybe what I do, I'm just going to drink it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I told her. Like, the truth, because I feel comfortable, I'm just going to the truth now. I feel comfortable telling her anything. And that's one of the best relationships I've ever had. And she's like, well, you want to throw it out? I can just put it off the grass. and it felt good. You know, I was able to go to sleep and hold my baby and just being cautious lately and trying to redirect myself as obviously I didn't do a good job my last 4 kids. I mean, something's wrong there, my patients for one, so I just spend time with my baby. A lot of times for, if we teach you how to be a re-teaching or teaching, actually, like I said before, we don't have to be a mom. I just take care of my house and keep doing dishes instead of letting it pile up and just little things,
that I wouldn't do before, but then the first program, and the redirection, and suggestions, I would be God knows. You know what I mean? And it is so good in this program, and I need to hear whatever he has to say, you know what I mean? And I need to see Dave here, because shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's really good to see him. Like, it's really good to see him. And I never seen him such cheeks. You know what I mean? It's feel good when, you know, it's telling you right now, it's a rapture, whatever it's called, revival. It's, you know what I mean? It feels sometimes when you see people like that you know from the outside, from, you know, back when you were active, like, it's like a revival. You get that revival feeling, you know what I mean? And that's great. That's when you're for it, you know what I mean? I just keep coming back. If you need pray, if you got some start your day, if you can, at any point in time of the day, call your sponsor. Call somebody if you need to. Reach out. That is the foundation for me, for sure. Yeah. Okay.